kind of to back up maybe a little bit.
Okay.
You know, I got a late start in music, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I studied with Mike Berghauer in town here, and he was a very good inspiration in terms of jazz style. Like Paul Brody, he knew nothing about jazz.
But he
did know
theory
about the saxophone.
Yeah.
And, you know, what you need to do to practice your scales. So so he spent like, we spent like a couple years where I would just practice all day long and just playing scales to get my technique to the point where when I did go to Berkeley, I would be able to, you know, I would have something to back me up. You know, I'd have a good foundation. And but the unfortunate thing was Berkeley, I went there for the jazz. That's what I wanted to do, is go there for the jazz.
Yep.
And I had no experience in jazz because all I did, I was isolated just practicing the saxophone.
Yep.
So it took me about 3 years before I got a chance, before finally somebody said, you know what, I like your sound. How would you like to go to a jam session? That was a friend of mine on my second last CD, Calvin Hill. So I was invited to a jam session, and that was the beginning of a whole new series of weekly, like sometimes 3-4 times a week,
mm-hmm.
we would go and we'd learn how to play. And that's how you do it. You have to, you know, you have to get yourself to a point, a level where the music, you know, where you have technique, because, you know, jazz is an art form, and
yep.
you know, you have to have your instrument together. So so that's what we did. We just played like 3 or 4 nights a week.
So you're kind of honing your chops.
Yes.
Okay. Let's play a track off of Live at the Registry. What would you like to hear?
Well, you could play the first track.
Okay.
It's called Joe Tanson, and that was written by my good friend Barry Wills, who
mm-hmm.
Right now he was a professor at University of Waterloo.
And, right.
You know, he's not doing that well right now, but he wrote this song for me, and I always liked the piece. So what I did was I just rearranged it in my style. He had it as a waltz, and I have it more of a, I don't know what you call it, but it's a different style.
Okay, how do you pronounce this?
Joe Tanson.
Joe Tanson. This is John Tank, Joe Tanson on Coral FM. Oh, my fingers are... Okay, let me do this here.
Thank you.
Woohoo! John Tank from his Live at the Registry CD. And you have Bernie Sinensky on piano.
Right.
Ted Warren on drums. And Jim Vivian on bass.
That's right.
Right. You've worked with Bernie for a long, long time, Bernie Sinensky. How did you guys meet?
I had just come from Boston, and from Berkeley, and I had just moved to Toronto, and I went to George's Spaghetti House, which was the main jazz club. And
I remember
for all the local guys to play, and Bernie had his own job there. He had just moved to Toronto, and I said, "Could I play with you?" And he said, "Sure." So he said, "What do you want to play?" I said, "How about Dolphin Dance?" Well, that was kind of a more modern tune. It was, kind of a progressive type of tune by Herbie Hancock. And he was surprised that I knew it.
Wow.
And we played it. And, it's amazing. Bernie and I go back all those years, back to the early 70s, and we have never had an argument, ever.
That's amazing.
Not a bad feeling, nothing.
That,
we're like brothers.
That actually is amazing. In music, you know how, musicians, a group of musicians, almost like a family. So that's remarkable when you think about it. That is great.
We have a mutual respect, I guess you might say. Sometimes he gets annoyed a little bit. You can see his mustache start to twitch a little bit. when he gets a little, because sometimes you're trying to play and it's not what you really want. But overall, we know that you can't hit it every night,
No, because we're going to go back to a basic question here, because we were talking about this during the break. What is jazz? What defines jazz? There's different types of jazz.
Well, I remember reading something by some of the jazz musicians back in the, 30s, 40s. They were saying jazz is a title that they've given to a particular type of music, And say, but each person has their own music. So you can't put anybody into a box and say you're a jazz player. I mean, there is a genre, You can tell the difference between jazz and, let's say, bluegrass music.
Yeah, exactly.
You're in a ballpark, But the thing is that each person has their own way of doing it. So there's not like saying like this is modern jazz or this is Dixieland jazz, because every band has their own a way of doing it. And of course, there are certain time periods. If you were around in the 40s, you would probably be playing music that sounded like it would remind you of Charlie Parker, or Thelonious Monk, because that was the time period. If you were around in the 60s, you would probably hear, you'd say, oh yeah, that I can hear the Coltrane influence, because it's a certain time period. But still, everybody has their own style. I can listen to a lot of trumpet players, say, and within 1 second I can tell you right who it is, because they have their own voice.
Right.
You hear Thelonious Monk, immediately you know who it is. Just one chord practically, and you know who it is. So it's but to a lot of people, a lot of people don't even know what the instrument is. Sad as that may be, that seems to be, and that's because they don't listen to instrumental music too much. Everything has to have words, so they listen to the words. And all, they might say, oh, well, that's a trumpet player, but they don't realize that that's Freddie Hubbard.
Yeah.
Or it's Dizzy Gillespie. They don't realize that. It's just a trumpet.
Right. That's true.
So it's education that gets people to understand. You can't explain what jazz is verbally. You have to experience it. And once you know it, then you know it.
That's true. Now I'm stumped. This is a question I want to know. I don't know if you can answer this or not, but where does jazz get its origins from?
Well, I believe that part of it came from Europe.
Okay.
In New Orleans back at the turn of the century, Native Americans were not allowed to play musical instruments in New Orleans or any place in the United States.
Okay, didn't know that.
Yeah, they were not allowed to read. And so what happened was New Orleans was the first place that opened up music for African Americans. And you had a big Creole population, which was French.
Treme. Yeah. Yep.
And then you had the real African population, and they were given instruments. So what they did was, but they were given European instruments. So they'd say, well, what's this, a trumpet, that came from Europe like 200 years ago, or clarinets and violins and whatever. So they started taking all these different methods, like the Arban trumpet method and different, and they learned how to read. And they could play, they learned the whole classical technique of how to learn how to play an instrument. But they had one thing that the Europeans didn't have, and that was the African heritage, which is the blues.
The soul, yeah.
The soul right, of yep. Africa, because that's the oldest population known to man is the African. So
right.
It goes back way, way back. So
that's where blues came from, too. Same, they kind of, you know, stem from each other, I guess.
Yeah, it didn't come from Europe.
No.
So when you took those two things together, that created something, a new kind of music. So the entrepreneurs who ran the music business, who basically they stole a lot of the music from from the great artists like Scott Joplin and W.C. Handy and all these people, they wrote music that was totally ripped off, but they had to write it and turn it over to somebody in order to make a little bit of money to survive. And so some entrepreneurs came along and they thought, wow, this is a new sound. We can
market
make money
this.
On this.
Yeah, really.
So then they started sending people to Europe and they sent Louis Armstrong over there. He was probably the first big, really big name.
Yeah.
And when people heard him over there, they couldn't believe it. Like all these musicians came back stage and they said, we want to look in your trumpet. And because they thought he had something in there, because they said, that's impossible. You played so high, nobody can play that high.
It's just his voice, his vocal control, I guess.
And breathing and power, whatever. And so that's basically, to me, the origins of the music. And then you had, for saxophone, you had like Coleman Hawkins. He was the first popular. I mean, the saxophone was a real kind of corny sounding instrument, and he came out with a style that just went all over Europe and America. And then Lester Young was the other one. And for many years, you either played out of the Coleman Hawkins style, which is a big, great, big, husky sound, or you played a sweeter sound, which was Lester Young.
Okay.
And so those two, and all the other musicians that were influenced, you could tell they were either influenced by him or, you know, like Coleman Hawkins or Lester Young.
But they had their own sound because of the way they played themselves.
That's right.
Well, that's amazing. I wanted to ask you this, too, because I'm guessing you played tenor sax, soprano sax, flute?
Flute.
Is there anything else?
Clarinet, a little bit of clarinet.
That's right.
I'm not really big on the clarinet because I don't really get much chance to use it, you know. But I am incorporating the flute these days more.
Okay. I thought so. I have seen you play the flute on occasion. I'm going to play another track from Jazz Live from the Registry. And for anybody that's just tuning in, this is Coral FM. I'm on Sound FM. I'm just checking the time here because I'm still here. I'm here till 6 o'clock with John and Vicky, my special guest, John Tank, and his lovely companion, Vicky. I can't remember your last name. Anyway, they're here. And John is playing at the Registry Theater this Friday night. And the show starts at 8, right? Is that
8 o'clock,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. And with his good pals, Ted Warren, Jim Vivian, and Bernie Sininski. So I know there's a ton of people that are going to be there. So this will be great. There's more information at the Registry Theater website, too. And they also have a Facebook page. So I'm going to play this song, Veronica, and actually this is written for Vicky. Am I right?
That's right.
I'm right. Okay. Veronica on Coral FM, John Tank, Sound FM.
Thank you.
Veronica. And that was for Vicky. That's John Tank Group Live from the Registry. And, of course, he's playing the Registry this Friday night with the boys on the CD. So that's really interesting. Why did you write this song, or how did you write this song? This is something I wanted to ask you, actually, John. How do you write?
It's a very slow process. Most tunes come to me, I get a basic idea of it, and then I just have to digest it for a long period of time, and then I start writing, and then, bam, I hit a brick wall.
Yeah.
And I have to let it, because I can't go on until I find something that I'm happy with, and then, but what do you do when you can't hear anything? Like, you just don't know what the next part's going to be. So I just work with it, and eventually it gets done. You know, this tune was in my head for many years, and I never wrote it down. I think I probably just wrote
scribbled
a sketch
it down
of it down
somewhere, and
just an idea, a basic idea of it, because I could hear it, but I didn't know what to do with it or what chords would fit with it, or you know, so. So just in 2010, then I really, you know, got into it and just really worked at it. So, yeah, I was quite happy the way it came out.
It's a very nice, upbeat, nice piece of music, actually. And that's for Vicky, who's sitting right beside you, actually. Let's talk about Live at the Registry. How did this all come about? I'm sure you've been asked this question before, but because I'm local and I know most of these boys, how did this all happen?
Well, the idea of the concert was Lawrence McNaught, who, you know, does all the managing of the registry, the music part of it anyway. And, you know, he contacted me and said, how would you like to do a gig here? And I said, well, great, you know. So, so we had the gig set up, and I said, you know, do you know of anybody that would like to, you know, maybe that has a little tape recorder? I would just like to basically have a, you know, just a record of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, you know, he said, Earl McCluskey owes me a favor. So he said, I'll get him to come in and do the recording for you. He said, it won't cost you anything. So I said, wow, well, I can't lose with that. So
no kidding.
Yeah, so we did the recording, and had no idea how it was going to turn out. And when I heard it, I went over to Earl's, and when he played it back for me, it was just like I couldn't believe how well the sound quality was, what he did. And he recommended that. He said, look, he said, if you have a monitor up on the stage, it's going to kill everything, because mm-hmm. you'll hear all this feedback.
Right.
He said, so if you can just record acoustically, totally mm-hmm. acoustic, then we can close mic it, and you know, and it'll sound much better. So, and since then, I've heard people like Jack Walrath. He told me, he said, this is the best live recording that he's ever heard. And I've had several people tell me the same thing. They can't believe the sound. Like, and my other three were done in a studio.
Right, we're done right. All different studios, too.
And this one, to me, has the best sound of all of them.
I think when the registry is full, there's a nice sort of, I don't know how to describe it, warmth to it. And the whoever's performing on stage, it kind of envelops the warmth. Of it, it just, it sounds very solid and high quality. So,
well, people came up to me on the break, and they said, you know, it sounds like we're right up on the stage with you.
Mm-hmm.
The sound is so clear.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So I really find that this recording to me was just like, it was just luck, you know, because everything worked out perfect. Usually there could be something like a, you know, like a faulty,
mm-hmm.
if you have a faulty jack and you've got a hum coming through, that can ruin a whole recording.
Yeah, exactly.
The engineer can kill it for you. There's so many things, but all the positive things were right in right where they should be. And so, it, you know, my thing is how could I get a better recording than that, a better quality?
So when you come, when you're playing at the registry this weekend, Will you be playing songs from this CD as well as other CDs?
Yes.
Okay.
Mostly from other CDs. Because,
okay, but you know, reinvented, maybe?
Pardon?
Reinvented?
Reinterpreted? Well, yeah, because it's going to be different people playing the tunes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, So they're going to play them different than, you know. I mean, we tend to think like, you know, because you hear a recording, you say, oh, it's like etched in stone, but it's not really.
Mm-mm.
You can play exactly the same notes, but it's going to have a different feel. I might phrase something a little different and, you know.
How much improvisation goes on stage? I think I've asked you this question before. And does it vary with various players?
Yeah, there's probably about 80% is improvised. The rest of it is playing the composition, the actual tune.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, the space after that, in between the front and the back of the tune, there's all this part in the middle where the improvisation goes on.
The tangents. So how do you guys know? You just, is it something that you feel, an instinctive feel? It's kind of like, okay, go Ted. Okay, go Jim. Go Bernie.
I have directions, you know.
Yep.
We have what they call arrangements or charts. You know, you have to have that, you know, so everybody's on the same page.
Yep.
You know, everybody knows, you know, like this time what I did was I have a computer program where I write everything out. And I can actually play it back. I actually write in the drum part. So I have a drummer, like an electronic drummer and the bass player. I write in bass lines and everything. I write in the piano chords, everything.
And
so
everything
I actually can hear it back.
Right.
And then I send each musician a copy of not the actual, the sound, but just the printed copy so they can look at.
You get
like
an
if
idea.
I send a drum part, for example, I can send a drum part. The drummer looks at it, he sees his part, but he doesn't know what the bass player, the saxophone, and the piano player is doing. So I send the whole score so they can see what everybody
else is doing.
So they can go to the piano and sit down and play through it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so, and it's a way for me to like have my stuff on a PDF file, like in, you know, filed away.
Mm-hmm.
So if I do a job somewhere and I want to play some of my own music, I can just email it to them ahead of time and they've got it.
Hey, technology grand. And
it's
actually,
great.
Speaking of technology, you have a really savvy website. How's that had an impact on when? How has it impacted you as a musician? You're on MySpace as well.
Well, you know what? I've never there's a link to my email, and I've never got an email saying, "Well, I was just on your website, and I just wanted to say hello, or I wanted to know about where I could buy a copy of your CD or anything like that." I've never had it, but. The one thing that it does that's good is that I can list my, you know, where I'm playing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if someone is interested in booking me, there are pictures there.
Yeah,
there's my
it's
whole
great.
Biography.
Yeah.
So I can just say, it's all there.
Yeah, that's
know?
Right.
So they
and
can
you
download
don't...
it. And
They've got all the information they need.
Yeah, and I can get back to practicing.
Oh, yeah, and just while we're... Where are your CDs available? If people want to pick up your music, where do they find it?
Well, usually, I guess the first three CDs are... The first two are probably out of print.
Ooh, no, you have to sign these. Because then that's going to just make them appreciate more.
Yeah, I mean, I have copies of them that I take with me when I'm playing. But usually most CDs are sold like off the bandstand.
Yeah, exactly. Like at the concerts and stuff.
Yeah.
You have a table so people, they hear your music live and it's like, I want. Yeah, and I think that's great.
Yeah,
I think that's really good.
We've had like record stores where there's like, you know, like 50,000 CDs. In the store, well, there's not much chance somebody's going to go right to your CD and pick it out. You know what I mean?
Unless they've seen you in concert. And I think doing shows myself too, I know that musician makes does really well usually at the merchandise table as well. That's always good for them because you know they have the audience that's your fan base. So of course they're going to go to they want to collect all your work, which is great. But you also where can you get your CD Baby? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's where Live at the Registry. That's on CD Baby. So I think people can get an electronic download, or they can actual order the product.
Okay.
From them.
Okay. Let's see here. Oh yeah, we're going to go back. One, I think it's back one CD to Canadian Sunset. And I want to ask you about it before I play this. I want to know, what was the inspiration for Tank Tune?
It was a song I wrote back when I was living in Toronto. In, do you remember Lighthouse?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm that old. Yep. Yeah, I do. Yep.
I played Well, they were quite... well known, and
they had a big band. They had a big band sound. They had a lot of horns and stuff.
13 pieces.
Yeah, yep.
And I did a gig with them, and I played soprano saxophone. I played fourth trumpet on soprano saxophone because they needed a fourth trumpet player, and so I played soprano. I played the trumpet part on soprano. And I don't know, I was just inspired by their music. So I came back and I wrote this tune. And I wanted to write kind of like a pop-type tune, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there was, I think it was a trumpet player from the States and who was living in Toronto at the time. And we played the tune, and he said, could I have a copy of it? And I said, well, sure. He said, well, what do you call it? I didn't have a title for it. And I said, oh, just call it Tank Tune. So we wrote Tank Tune. And then later on, like several years later, like 25, 30 years later, somebody says, you know what? Your tune is in a new book, a book that musicians all over the world use. They're called The Real Book. And
wow.
Each book, there's book 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yep.
The one mine is in is book 4. And these are like, there's probably like, let's say, 2,000 tunes in each book. So this book, was the fourth one was compiled, and then they put my tune in there. So so then I thought, I wasn't even sure, you know. I looked at it and I said, that's not my tune. I never wrote that. And then I went to the piano, and because I bought a copy of the book, and then I open it up, and I'm playing the piano. I said, yeah, you know what? It does sound familiar. So then I did an arrangement on it.
Well, this is from Canadian Sunset, Canadian Sunset with John Tank, Peter Basden on piano, Ted Trimble on bass, and Mike Clark on drums. This is Tank Tune on Coral FM.
Thank you.
Well, that was Tank Tune from Canadian Sunset. That was